Why is it so important that we talk to kids about money, and are enough parents doing it?
The reason it's so important is because talking about money has a direct connection to teaching kids values. We don't always see it that way, but quite often when kids are asking us about our income or how much our homes are worth or how much money the family has, they're really trying to figure out, are we okay? Where do we stand? And what goes on in the world? And why is money such an important part of it? There's something very important at the root of those questions. And if we aren't having those conversations, we aren't getting access to the answers and to the discussions that can lead us directly to all of the values like patience and modesty and generosity that we want to imprint.
Well, money is such an emotionally charged topic. I mean, even when we talk with our spouse about it, it can destroy marriages, right? So do we have to come to terms with our own relationship with money before we talk to our kids about it?
Yeah, absolutely. And all sorts of people, before they shack up together, don't have these conversations. They haven't spoken with their spouse about the conversations or lack thereof in their households growing up, and whether there was shame or blame or anxiety or exhilaration around money and saving and spending and giving. And you should know yourself, learn about yourself better when it comes to these issues. You should talk about it with your spouse or partner if you have one. And if you don't have one, you should be getting straight with yourself in your own head about fundamental questions like how much is enough and how much is too much.
What is a spoiled child in your mind?
Well, people think it has something to do with money, and then there's a much better chance of a more affluent family raising spoiled children than a family that maybe has less than average. I did not find that to be true. Spoiling is first and foremost about, a lack of any rules in a household. You can spoil a kid by not having any expectations for them or not enforcing the rules if you have them. I also think spoiled kids are used to having things done for them, and it doesn't cost a lot of money to do a lot for a child on an everyday basis. It only gets to the money part when we talk about the amount of things, stuff, or experiences these kids can have. And sometimes kids are, lavished with stuff, sometimes because the parents have a lot of money, and sometimes because the parents don't have a lot of money, and people in the extended family feel badly about the family's situation, and, they lavish all sorts of things on the kids, and then sometimes they're not grateful, right? So those kids are spoiled, too. But I think it's much more about attitude and about rules, even, than it is around money, per se.
What advice do you have for parents who, and let's use as an example, the parents who have plenty of discretionary income and want to strike that balance between giving their kids a good life and overindulging them? How much is enough? How do we know?
Well, to answer the how much is enough question, I get this question about allowance a lot. And the way I try to answer it is like this. Look, you want your kids to have enough so that they have some of the things that they want, but not so much that they don't have to make a lot of really hard choices, trade-offs, right? Because that's what grown-ups do with their money, no matter how much they have. So give them an allowance. Money is for practice. Allowance is a teaching tool. Give them plenty of opportunities to make mistakes, but not so much money that they won't have to make a lot of really hard choices, because they'll get stuff wrong. They'll screw up in all sorts of ways that will be uproarious. And you can't even predict the crazy ways that they'll mess up with their money, but don't bail them out. Let them learn those important lessons from handling money themselves. And if you impose a sort of artificial deprivation, right, where even if you have it, they don't get a lot of it, they will learn very quickly on their own.
Oh, and when you talk about letting kids have access and let them make mistakes, you use a great example in the book of, say, a teenager who has been given charge of her clothing allowance for a year.
Right. There are families who do that as young as 10 or 12. By then, kids have the math skills to add up to, three or a low four-figure number and, subtract money out of there and make a budget for themselves. And, and then you hand that money over in a lump sum, in July after you figured out what the kids need and what you're willing to give them. And you turn them loose and they do all sorts of crazy stuff. They may decide in, October that they want to buy a prom dress for May with, 300 of the $500 budget. And, you know, then where are they? Because they still need winter boots and maybe two pairs of winter boots if it's Rochester. So, you know, they will mess up in all sorts of interesting ways. But you do not want to let them come to you hat in hand for extra money. If they mess up, the requirement should be that they still have to get all of the things that they need. And they may need to, you know, find some other ways to earn extra money if they have blown it on the budget front.
And I want to backtrack a second because you already mentioned the idea of an allowance. You don't particularly believe that should be tied to doing chores, right?
No, everybody in the household does chores. The grown-ups don't get paid for that. I see no reason why the kids should, which is not to say the kids should do fewer chores. They should do more chores. They're capable of way more than we give them credit for, and at a younger age than we might think. And if anybody has any doubts about that, watch MasterChef Junior and see how those 8 and 10-year-olds whip up, you know, incredible meals. Our kids can and should be making us dinner, and we should not be paying them for it. Allowance is a tool for learning. Money is for practice. And if you pay kids for chores, you're going to end up in a really dangerous negotiating position because these smart aleck 8 and 10-year-olds are eventually going to come to you and say, you know what, I've got enough money saved for a little while, so I'm not going to do the chores for a week or a month or 3 months or until their money runs out. And that's not the situation we want to be in. We want them contributing to the household. We want them to know that that's an obligation because we love one another, and these things that we do for one another around the house, we do for free for that reason.
You know, income inequality is a subject I think that's gotten a lot of attention nationally, certainly in the presidential campaign. What do we tell kids when they start asking questions about why I have more and my friend has less?
Well, you don't want to dodge the question, right? And quite often, one of the best ways to respond when they hit you with one of those zingers and you're not quite sure what to say is to look right back at them and say, why do you ask? And they may tell you about you know, something that's going on with one of their friends, or maybe they are the person with less and their friends have things that they don't have. And I think it's important to emphasize that a lot of the conversations about inequality are about whether things are fair. Kids have a very sensitive fairness prism. They are constantly talking about things that are not fair. And, you know, is it fair that some people make more money and some people make less for jobs that, you know, may or may not be equal in importance? You can have a really interesting family values discussion about that, you know, which doesn't even have to be about politics or taxes or who pays what or what kind of promises we make to one another as a society and whether we tax one another enough or too much to pay for those things, right? But you can go there as well, and it gives you an opportunity to turn the tables back on your kids and ask them questions. And you'll be amazed at how much you learn by asking them those questions and getting the answers. But you also want to emphasize, as always, right, that just because somebody has more or less than somebody else doesn't mean that it's their fault. It doesn't mean that they did anything wrong. And by the way, that goes for the richest family in the school. Quite often, the wealthier families are ashamed of being singled out, or maybe they're a little ashamed at how they got the money. Maybe it wasn't, you know, 100% legitimate or in a business that some people look down upon. So, you know, everybody has complicated feelings about money, and it's important to emphasize that too.
Yeah, it's a complicated subject, no doubt about it. Ron, if there is one overall message you hope parents walk away from after reading your book, what would that be?
Don't hesitate to narrate along as you go through life. You know, I don't encourage people to become you know, money obsessed, right? But every day, and certainly every week, a window of opportunity opens in your daily life to ask a pointed question or respond to a pointed question in a way that allows you to take a conversation about money and turn it into a conversation about values and what your family stands for and the difference between needs and wants and discussions about patience and how that connects to saving and modesty and how that connects to spending and generosity and how that connects to giving and perspective on your place in the world and how you got there and whether you like it that way. So embrace those opportunities and use them to take your family, you know, on conversational journeys that can end up in all sorts of wonderful places.
I've been speaking with New York Times columnist Ron Lieber about his book, The Opposite of Spoiled, Raising Kids Who Are Grounded, Generous, and Smart About Money. Ron will be speaking at the JCC's annual Jewish Book Festival Wednesday, November 16th at 7 p.m. Ron, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
The pleasure was mine. I look forward to being there.